Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Wendy Simpson lives life on an epic scale. In her CV, you'll find Wendy was the first woman to be appointed as Senior Vice President of Alcatel Asia Pacific, responsible for a sales budget of 4.2 billion euro. She was also part of the team who negotiated with the Chinese government to bring the internet to China. Wendy's commitment to sharing her life experiences to lift up business women is legendary. In fact, in 2013, Wendy was awarded an Order of Australia Medal in recognition of her service to women and disadvantaged young people. We start our time with Wendy Simpson, OAM, on her first career choice. Teacher, inspired by a movie.
Yes, well, To Sir With Love was a movie about a teacher who went into a very urban environment where the kids really had given up hope in believing in themselves, and he gave them hope. He could see something in them, and I guess something in himself too, that he really wanted to inspire them, that education was a great thing and that they could take themselves in a whole new direction if they were prepared to give themselves a go at education. So, yeah, he made the classroom come alive and he gave them possibilities, and it certainly inspired me as a young person. I did see that education can take kids in a whole new direction. It can give them possibilities, and that the good schools can open up places that kids had never thought about going, and we had a lot of fun. I must say, I really did take the kids to whole new places, and they were pretty badly behaved kids at Sunshine North Tech, and so they weren't places where we were welcome in the museums and the art galleries. It was a bit of a trial to get them there. So I organised for celebrities to come to the school.
Fabulous.
And it was great for them to actually experience the lives that these kids were leading too.
In looking at the disparate career progressions in your life, you seem to live your life with open doors and windows to whatever it is that God would have you do next. Let's explore those first forays into the business world. The catalyst, a Rotary scholarship to take you to the United States.
It was quite a landmark decision to apply for the Rotary Scholarship, and it happened to be back in the 80s, would you believe, when Rotary was debating whether they would or wouldn't have women members, and they decided to have a scholarship for four businesswomen to go to Connecticut, which is one of the most beautiful and most wealthy parts of the US. At that stage, I was teaching a school for juvenile delinquents, and so I wasn't really in the category of businesswoman, but I thought I should just have a go. So I did. I applied to be in this competition, and it was quite a challenge to even put myself in the category of businesswoman.
Yeah.
But I thought, well, I'm just going to give this a go. So it was very confronting, I have to say. It was by elimination, and so we got to meet some of the other women, and I thought they were all fabulous women. And I thought, oh, they're going to be selected, and you know, I'm sure I'm not going to be selected. But as it turned out, as the interview process went through, it was over 3 days.
Wow.
It was quite a rigorous interview process. Wow. I could see that there were some things about my life that were perhaps very interesting, and so I did get to go to Connecticut. And I said to my husband when I came back, I'd met some of the CEOs of the world's greatest companies. I said, you know, I've actually walked around the buildings. I've sat in these offices. I've met the captains of industry in America. And if I wanted to, I think I could do that, because the work I was doing with juvenile delinquents was very high pressure. I could see that I could actually do that work. So I sense,
as opposed to an aspiration, you felt a real affinity with these people.
I did.
This is where a lot of us tend to fall off the rails, actually converting that aspiration or inspiration into something tactile, something physical. So how did you go about applying that in your life?
Yes, a few things that were pretty basic, like just starting to read business magazines. So I became an avid reader of Business Review Weekly and just got my head around what it was that business people did. Because remember, being a school teacher and teaching juvenile delinquents, there was a lot of it was just sheer survival skills, just gut instinct, being able to read the play and anticipate the moves before the kids were able to come up with some little scheme they were up to. So in that sense, that's one of my skills as a business person now, is that I can read the play. I can see something. I can pick a trend before other people pick it.
Wow.
So there's some intuitive gifts that I have, and then I eventually did a journalism degree and then an MBA. So I did some formal education as well.
What are some of the other leadership principles you picked up during those teaching years?
In the very early years, I think what I was quite clear about was that there were some people who, when opportunities were given to them, they said yes. They didn't hesitate. They just took them. And I think that's something that stayed with me my whole life now, that opportunities don't come with bows on them and people sort of shouting at them. Often they're quite subtle and they don't announce themselves as an opportunity. But if you can just pause and say, what am I supposed to be learning from this thing now, then it can become a real life-changing opportunity.
That's a heightened sense of awareness. Is that something we can learn? Can that be taught?
My grandmother was a great woman of God, and when I was very little, I had an autograph book, and I used to ask people to put some little phrase or some comment in there that would help me in my life. And she wrote the Proverbs 3 verses 5 and 6 about trusting in the Lord with all your heart and leaning not to your own understanding, acknowledge him in all your ways and he'll make your path straight. And so that's been a verse which has really led me, and it's been an anchor for me in everything. And so I think God does actually give us the gift of wisdom if we trust him.
Wendy, there are many epithets that could be applied to the various phases of your life. One of the ones that struck me early on was the first woman too.
Yes.
If we head to the TNT section of your life, you were the first woman to head up an international air freight arm.
There were points of change in industries when people are looking for new skill sets, where more of the same isn't going to work. And TNT was transitioning. There was quite a cozy relationship between Sir Peter Abels and Bob Hawke, and TNT grew to be a very substantial organisation globally. But in Australia, the trade union movement had really captured some of the operational resources, and it was really kind of caught up in a whole lot of trade union activities, and it was hard for TNT to move. They needed a shift. And also, what they needed was somebody who understood customer service and to work with the staff outside the union movement. And so I remember the TWU coming one day and being very angry with me because I had organised a staff barbecue and we were having lunch, and they said, you know, we just don't like you. You've got to understand, they're our members. What are you doing talking to them? I mean, all this stuff, that's our job. We're supposed to be having the lunches and organise it. You're making it very hard for us to relate to our members. You've got to stop doing things like that.
So you had quite some success there at TNT. You revolutionised the business model, and that became a lesson that was picked up by one of the world's largest telecommunications companies. Tell me about the moment when Alcatel reached out and made that first point of contact with you.
Yes, well, there was it was actually an ad again in the paper for someone to help them with their government relations and with transitioning as the telecom industry was being deregulated. So another point in major change going on in the industry. TNT had been taken over by the Dutch, and I'd had meetings with the senior executives from Holland who'd come, and the feeling very much was that they weren't appreciating the Australian leadership. They'd made it very clear that that's why they'd bought the company, because the Australian leadership wasn't able to keep the company going globally. And also, women weren't really recognised as being very very respected for their management skills. And I thought, wow, I've got to start looking around for something else. So I saw this ad in the paper. I didn't know what the industry was, and I had a chat with the headhunter, and they said, you're not really the kind of candidate we would normally put forward, but you've got a very interesting background.
Your job with Alcatel is about to take you to China, and that in itself perhaps would never have eventuated had it not been for a relationship you formed much earlier on with an Australian businesswoman. And I guess this is another waymark in your life where a great many of your successes have come from building relationships, haven't they?
Yes, Angeline Lowe, what a wonderful friend. friendship I've had with her. And she and I helped start the Australian Council of Businesswomen. And so we got to know each other, and we were working on that. Came about because we met the trade mission that was being sent off, I think, to America. And we said, there's no businesswoman on that. And at that stage, the federal trade minister said, well, if you could find us some women, we'd be happy to send them on the trade delegation. And we said, right, this is it. We're going to start the Australian Council of Businesswomen because we wanted more women to go on trade missions. And Angeline said to me, one of the things that Asians do is, even if we're an employee, we always have a business on the side, and it's very important that you look out for an opportunity that you can somehow be involved in a business. And I said to her, my goodness, okay, what should I be looking out for? And she said, well, you know, something will come up, just keep your eyes open. And my husband had become the general manager of Westray Engineering. He started to manage it and do a number of things to improve the business. But then after a while, there was quite a reluctance for the management that he was reporting to take the business to another level. And he couldn't quite understand why. And then he really pressed them. And they said, actually, we're trying to sell the business, so we don't want to invest any more in it. And then I thought, maybe this is the business that my friend said I should be looking out for. And so we did a management buyout.
To be fair, this isn't selling hobby techs on the side.
Yes.
You're buying a company.
Yeah, correct. Yes, one of the most substantial manufacturing business of automotive components. 30% of the revenue came from automotive components, and then rail track hardware and major construction equipment for the mining sector. Westray Engineering had built all the bolts that hold the flagpole together at Parliament House Stadium.
Wow.
At the Olympic Stadium in Sydney, and the foundation bolts for the Centrepoint Tower, Sydney Tower, there, right in the downtown. So, yeah, very substantial business. And
does nothing daunt you?
Yeah, it's true. I don't see the problems, and I listen to God, and it is amazing, the different changes. But I guess I walk with God and having these adventures in business.
So you start to gather these fragments of life together well before you move to China, and in part responsible for bringing the internet to an entire nation.
Yes.
What an extraordinary step.
Yes, God's great. It's great how in Jeremiah he says, you know, I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you, plans for you to do well. And so I think that's definitely been the hallmark of my life, is that I believe that God has a plan for my life, and it's not a set plan that I can see, but as I pay attention to what God's telling me in each moment, I do see new opportunities. That's true.
So here you are in China, working with Alcatel, opening up the world of telecommunications to a nation of many billions of people. What are you learning there?
One of the first things was to understand how the Chinese reward their top people, because the deal that we needed to do was all the way up to the Premier and the Prime Minister. And so it needed to be in the context of what they were wanting to achieve. And it was a hot debate. It was a very hot debate, because they could see that the internet would also open up their nation to a whole lot of collaboration within what people were doing, and that may not suit the communist way of doing things. China was just starting to open up. Everyone had to actually pass their passport back to the officials when they finished their overseas trip, so there wasn't very free travel. Mm. In fact, as we put our team together, we were the very first organisation to ever require an international travel agency. So few people travelled when we first went there back in 1999, that there were no travel agencies that were capable of servicing international travellers, where the travel originated in Shanghai.
In China, yeah.
I mean, one of the most interesting challenges was, once we had actually done the deal, the whole of the Chinese company that we'd bought became part of the global Alcatel enterprise, and it's listed on the stock exchange, which means you have to have the ability to give forecasts.
Yeah.
And you need to do them in a way which affects the stock price, which the Alcatel company was a very significant player on the CAC 40 in Paris, and could movements in the Alcatel price could actually change the whole stock
exchange.
The fortunes
of an economy.
Yes. So I needed to help the Chinese to understand that, and we needed to get very accurate estimates of what they were going to be selling. So to take an organisation where there was 7,000 employees that had, was in the 31 provinces of China, and they had worked under the communist regime, to be told how many telephones they would make and how many telephones they would be manufacturing and how many telephone products they would be selling, to a market forecasting was completely different. So to go from a communist central regulated opening up to a more demand economy, that was a huge shift. And I made friends with a young sales manager who was being groomed by the Communist Party to be a very senior government official. And so we had meetings on a Saturday morning, and I would work with him and prepare him for his Monday morning sales meeting so that he could be the star of the show.
Yeah.
And then we ended up having a war room. We made his team the global centre of excellence for sales in the whole Alcatel network. Another thing that we did, which was just understanding how the Chinese worked. I was working with the Chinese management team, and once we'd acquired the business and we were talking about, well, what would it look like if we were successful? How would we know that this company has actually achieved the things that we all want to achieve, not just the new French owners and the stock price, but what do you want? And we were talking about it, thinking about it. And in the end, the thing that came through was they said, the Harvard Business Review will write a story on how great we are. And I said, that is a fabulous thing. Let's aim for that. And I said, so what are they going to say about us? And so we started to write down all the things that we will have done to get in the news. And then I said, okay, well, we better start going and doing them then. And would you believe we were the very first item in the Chinese edition of the Harvard Business Review? We were written up as the best company to learn from how to internationalize and how to take sales teams from a more centralized way of operating. So we achieved it.
Your career's had so many different facets to it. What are you, a coach, a mentor, an entrepreneur, or are they all one?
I like to say yes to them all.
So share with me what entrepreneurship means for you then.
Yeah, entrepreneurship is a fabulous way of doing business. I think Australians, and I hope that this interview inspires people to see that entrepreneurship is something that is open to us all. The very first people that came to Australia saw the possibilities. And out of our history, I think we've always thought that we're actually here as convicts, as people who are here to do what other people tell us to do. But if you really look at the lives of some of the people who made it in the early days of Australia, we do have a legacy of being entrepreneurs. So entrepreneurs see things that others don't see. Entrepreneurs go on holidays and are looking at things that are working in those economies, looking at what's working, what's not, what's successful, always looking at what need is not being met and trying to work out how that might be met.
You have a particular heart for women entrepreneurs. Is that because they're still not being served well, that we're not great at building an environment that sees them flourish, or are there other factors at play here that you're working with?
Yeah, look, I say that when Australia wants to win as many gold medals in the Olympic Games as it can, it makes sure that it enters a strong women's swimming team and a men's swimming team because we want to win the most gold medals. When we want to get a strong economy, we need to have both men and women entrepreneurs being supported and encouraged. And the reality is that 95% of all of the investment capital that is given to entrepreneurs, put into their businesses, goes to male entrepreneurs. And we say, well, if we're going to have a strong economy, we need to be looking out for the talent in young women entrepreneurs as much as we do for the men entrepreneurs. And the difference is that women don't have quite the same networks. they don't have the same access to the venture capital community as the male entrepreneurs. And so as an economy, as a nation, if we start to say, well, how are we going to intentionally welcome women into our networks, understand what their entrepreneurial ideas are, and help shape them so that they are more investor ready, then the whole economy is going to benefit from that. Those who are looking for talent need to be reminded that they should be looking for women entrepreneurs as much as men. And when you actually speak to them, a lot of them will say, yeah, look, we would actually like to meet more women entrepreneurs. So I think the area that we as a community need to encourage women to do is to talk more about the financials behind their business. Women often start the conversation with what a fabulous idea it is and how they really love the idea of the business that they're going to create, rather than saying to the investor, these are the numbers, look at the numbers, they're great numbers, this is a good investment for you.
Yeah.
Start with that first. And women are going to be working very hard in their businesses. All the research shows that women take an investor very seriously. They feel very, very passionate about making sure that the investor gets what the woman has promised them. And so they are actually a good investment, but they often forget to put the numbers right up front to show the investor that they really understand the numbers in their business.
Let's narrow the focus on your life just a bit more. Where did your love for foster care come from?
My husband and I, and Jeffrey is a wonderful husband. All of my achievements are done in partnership with him. There's nothing that he doesn't support and encourage and pray with me about. We were married about 6 months, and we were volunteers in our local church, the youth group, and we were working with kids who weren't part of a normal church. And so this group of kids became like a home church. We would have kids come to our house, and we would have a worship service and a Bible study with them. And when we found out that they didn't have homes, they were sleeping on the street, they were couch surfing, etc., we called a community meeting, and we found out that there was in fact about 120 kids in this category in the northern suburbs of Melbourne. And so we were the first group to get a state government grant to hire a housing worker. Some of the kids were mature enough to be able to live in supported accommodation, and others really needed a family environment. And so that's what we did. We did the training, and at that stage it was possible for foster cares to be two working couples. I think now the
it's
rules
different.
Have changed, but at that stage it was possible. And so we were able to have kids live with us, and we did that. I was a school teacher, and my husband was working in an engineering company, and we would tag team. He used to get up very early for work, and so he would get up early. I did sort of the late shift, and we'd span the environment, because the kids would often want to talk later at night.
Yeah.
They needed a good strong hand to get them out of bed to get things going in the morning. So we both used our strengths at different times of day to support these kids. Yeah, so we worked with the Salvation Army and the local school welfare teachers to make sure that they were getting the right support at school as well.
Are you a 5-10 year kind of planner?
I think it depends on which age group we're talking about. In my very early years, I was thinking in those time slots. Now I'm thinking about sort of 2-3 year time slots.
Because you managed to cram a lot in those 2-3 years. Do you take a moment to celebrate?
Yes, I do. Yes, I'm at the stage now where I don't have to schedule myself 5 days a week to be working in my businesses for those 5 days. So yes, I do take time out to just to reflect and to pray and to thank God and to renew myself.
Wendy Simpson, it's been a wonderful indulgence spending time with you. I know that you're very busy. Thank you so much for sharing your time and your life with us on Open House.
It's been a true pleasure. Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.